Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you stumped by a home improvement project or repair problem? Well, if so, you want to stay tuned because licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is here in the studio to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, property management. He joins us to offer you his expertise. It's always a popular show when Darren is on, so give us a call early. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And when we do that, we talk to Darren Tracy. He is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects. He is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
Last time you were on the show, we talked about, and you showed me pictures, I don't know if we put them on the website, or of a beautiful old Adirondack, much more than a cabin, I would say, that you were renovating.
An Adirondack great camp.
Incredible. And so how is that project going?
It's going great because we just finished the project yesterday and I received final payment.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's the best news of all then.
And the customer was happy and we didn't lose money on the project.
Oh, that's
good.
And
the project came out well and I think the building is going to stand for maybe another 100 years.
Now, what was the biggest challenge you had in renovating that camp?
Well, we had to jack the structure up. I mean, it's maybe 20, 30 tons that we had to lift up so that we could install a new foundation system. And it had settled about 6 inches on one side. So we had to jack it up and get it back into place.
And so that took how long?
We worked on the project about 2 months.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No.
All done. Everybody's happy. The phone lines are loading up here. So I suggest we get right to the calls at 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is here. Home improvement, maintenance, and repair today. Andy in Poughkeepsie is first. Andy.
Yes, hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's a plumbing question. I have a toilet on the second floor of my house, and I cannot seem to get it to, quote-unquote, flush properly. The float is working. The flapper is opening. The reserve tank is emptying. But there, it doesn't, you know, when you flush a toilet, it normally it fills with water and then it totally, you know, evacuates the water and then fills the bowl back up so it removes all the waste. It's not doing that. It's just kind of like swirling around. It rises and then it settles back down. So it's not getting a really good clean flush. Do I need to, can I snake that with the toilet on there or do I have to remove the toilet?
Okay, Andy, the problem would be one of two things. One thing would be a blockage, and another possible problem would be improper vent. You need to break a vacuum seal so that the water flows down easily. Let me ask you this question to troubleshoot that. When the water does go down through, do you hear a large gurgle as soon as
No. It- No, it almost doesn't. It never gets to that point where it like completely evacuates the bowl.
It never does.
It always just swirls and you know, sometimes not even the toilet paper even goes down.
Okay, well, I can't troubleshoot then. So
right.
I would try to snake it first, and you can snake it yourself. You can buy an inexpensive toilet snake from a hardware store. and snake it yourself. And we've encountered all kinds of blockages in toilet. Often the blockage is right there in the toilet. So the other toilet in your home flushes okay, is that correct?
Yes, yes. Okay. And my shower, which is in the same bathroom, and the sink and everything, all of those drain properly.
Yeah, well, that's a much slower volume of water that's going down the drain. Okay. You could have a ventilation problem and still have the shower drain properly, but try a snake, and if it's not a snake, if you do ever get it to the point, try a plunger and see if you can get some of the water going down through, and if it does go down through, listen for a gurgle sound where it's starving for air. If it's starving for air, it's a vent problem, and you need to increase your vent size, or there might even be a blockage in your vent pipe, insects or a bat or something like that.
Now, I had heard that putting a plunger on a toilet isn't always the best idea.
I don't know why that would be.
Okay, so you're all right with that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just if you got a blockage, it helps relieve the blockage. Putting a snake inside the toilet, it's a metal snake. Sometimes you can scratch up the porcelain, but there's a rubber guide on the snake, and you have that. You wear rubber gloves when you're doing this, and you slide the rubber guide up against the porcelain so you're not scratching the porcelain.
Just a shot in the dark here, Darren. Could Andy's issue here just be the float needs to be adjusted?
No. It sounds like he has enough water in the tank. It just he depresses the flush lever. And the water that's in the tank is not going down through.
But is it possible that it's closing too early? In other words,
that's another possibility, Andy. So I assume that you've tried to hold down the lever on the tank until the tank.
Oh yeah, I've literally held the flap open. I mean, I've looked. Right. I've watched the way that the upper reservoir is functioning, and that's functioning
right
correctly.
It goes down into the toilet, but the toilet doesn't empty. You know, do you have kids?
Yeah.
Do you have small kids?
No. Well, they act like it, but
okay.
They're not.
All right.
Yeah.
Because often things can become lodged.
Figurine,
in the,
like the Dora figurine we got out of our toilet one time. Yeah, that was great. Well, Vandy, thanks for a lot. Good luck. Our number is 800-348-2551. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And we go to John and Canaan. John.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a one wing of my house, which measures 20 by 40, so 800 square feet, is resting on 4-foot-high piers. And at the base of the piers is a large deposit of sand. There's a lot of moisture that permeates the space above, and some of the moisture is associated with mold. I've tried covering the entire space with spray foam insulation. That hasn't done any good. And what I'm wondering is, could it possibly be effective to put a thin coat of cement on top of the sand that's at the bottom of the crawl space, and if so, how thick a coat should I do it? Should I make, and or would it be more effective just simply to dig the whole thing out, and as you did with the Adirondack camp, jack it up a little bit and make a regular room underneath?
Okay, John, it may be more effective to create a basement space. But it's going to be a lot more work and a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
We have a lot of crawl space questions. I actually like them because the return on your investment for installing a proper building science is high, and you can really improve your condition. So let me briefly ask you a couple more questions. Do you have the crawl space skirted on the outside or sealed up so that you create a confined crawl space, or is it the air open to blow underneath?
There are two openings into that crawl space, but they're small.
Okay.
They were originally created in the third.
All right. Let me cut you off to keep this. Let me cut you off to keep this brief.
Sorry, yeah.
The skirting on the outside. What is the material made of?
Wood.
Okay. All right. This is what I would do. I would put a layer of 6 mil black poly down on top of your sand, and that will help.
I've done that.
That's in place?
Yep.
Okay. The other thing I would do is, particularly in the summer, seal up those openings so you do not get warm air traveling underneath, because what happens is that warm air goes into space, cools, and condenses, and you the result is a high humidity, which is one of the key ingredients for mold to grow.
Okay.
And I'm surprised that that hasn't solved the problem. What you could do is make sure that your 6 mil poly is sealed where it overlaps one piece to another and sealed on the perimeter.
Okay.
Sealed well. That really should help the humidity level down there. Then the next thing you could do is install a dehumidifier there and set it around 60% relative humidity. Shoot for 50, but I found that 60% works okay, and it's kind of like a happy medium where you're not sucking a lot of energy, but you're keeping the relative humidity low enough. And
okay.
If you want to talk to me about this more offline, you can do that. Contact me at Darren@WestBranchInc.com.
At WestBranchInc.com.
Right. And or my engineering site, just Google West Branch Engineering. And I'm a little bit puzzled why you haven't had more success, because it sounds like you've been doing some of the right things.
Let's take a break here. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Back in a flash. Hello again. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. I'm Ray Graff, our guest today. As always when we do these shows, Darren Tracy. And Darren, a couple of emails here. The lines are completely stacked. We'll get to that in a minute. This one came in from Anonymous. And Anonymous writes, I inherited my family house. There is an in-wall oven with a cabinet over it that we keep spices in. I recently discovered that anytime I use the oven, it heats up the cabinet over it, and therefore the spice jars. Is there a heat barrier of any kind that I can put on the floor of the cabinet that will prevent this? Heated spices, no good.
Yeah, they sell a aluminum-coated reflective insulation. Some is rigid, and some of it is flexible, and it comes in various thicknesses. I had some left over from a job, and I made a shroud for my Coleman cooler instead of buying a really expensive Yeti-type cooler, and put this shroud over top. It was only a quarter inch, and it was reflective, and it helped out a lot. And, you know, that's just $5 or $10. You can buy more than what you need, and you could lay that down on the base of your cabinet, and you probably solve your problems.
All right. This email came in from Tom, and Tom writes, I have experience with an oil-fired boiler that I had maintained once a year. But the question is, does a propane boiler need yearly maintenance? And that's from Tom.
Hi, Tom. The propane companies will tell you yes, but it's mainly for troubleshooting, making sure that the combustion chamber is working properly and other relays are working properly, as opposed to an oil-fired boiler that has a filter that definitely needs to be changed yearly, has a nozzle that clogs up with debris from the fuel oil that definitely has to be changed yearly, and the intake can be adjusted to maximize performance.
Mm-hmm.
So not as much, but I wouldn't go more than two years without having a propane or natural gas furnace taking a look at. 3 years on the outside, but probably not more than 2 years. And I used to clean furnaces.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I went to a two-year school, then worked 3 years, and I went back to engineering school. In the summer of between my first and second year, I worked for Agway Petroleum. I don't know if they're still in business, but they taught me how to clean furnaces in college. So they just gave me a van, and then the foreman went out with me one day. He said, okay, you're doing okay. And they just sent me out like the rest of the guys, and you sink or swim. And so I learned a lot about hands-on cleaning furnaces.
Mm, now you still know how to do that?
I do, but I hire somebody to do it.
Okay, well, that's too bad. I would say come on over around October. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Steve is in Rotterdam. Steve.
How do you do? Thanks for taking my call.
Hello.
I have a gunite pool, and it's in bad shape, and I want to bury it. What's the proper way of doing it?
For those listeners that do not know what a gunite pool is, gunite is a form of concrete that is sprayed on a cementitious product, and it's introduced with high-pressure air, and it's sprayed on to an unformed surface made of reinforcing steel. So it's just, and it's somewhat sticky, and you just use this hose and you spray it on and you trowel it, and that's the finish of the pool. To fill it, I would drill some holes in the deepest end of the pool, probably a couple inches diameter minimum. You can jackhammer them or drill them so that any stormwater can drain out, and just fill that with sand or any runobank material. ROB is the least expensive type of gravel that you can find out there, or fill material. It can either be sand or gravel. It's called ROB.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another satisfied customer. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Brian in Pittsfield. Brian.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I own a little house that was built in the mid-19th century, and it has a fieldstone foundation. And I guess I have sort of a general question about what I ought to do. One of the walls is somewhat bowed in, and that seems to correspond to a slant to the house, which I feel like is increasing, but could be my paranoia. And it does seem like at times in the past, someone has, I presume, jacked up the house and put layers of bricks or concrete on top of the foundation to sort of realign it. And I guess I'm just wondering, like, what you think I ought to do in terms of preventative maintenance, and how feasible it would be to jack up a house like this. It's probably only about 1,200 square foot footprint.
Well, it's feasible to jack the house. All it takes is money and some hard work. The first thing that I would do is try to keep the water away from the foundation. Water is the enemy with many maintenance problems with a home. Keep water away from the foundation, and you can do that in a couple of ways. One is to install a gutter. A gutter needs maintenance, and if you don't maintain a gutter, they can be more damaging than helpful. And the other thing that you can do, Brian, is to pitch the grade away from your foundation. And this is a common problem that I see. Houses will be built, and the ground will settle next to the foundation, and water drips off the eave line and tends to erode water there. And instead of shedding away from the building, it sheds towards the foundation.
Yeah.
So pitch the grade away. You can actually put a layer of plastic down, 6 mil poly, a distance of maybe 18 inches to 3 feet away from the building. After you've pitched the grade away, and then you can put dirt on top of that or decorative stone, the water comes off the eave, hits that, and sheds away. So that's number one. Number two, you can repoint the interior of the foundation, and pointing is just adding mortar in between the rocks that have washed out, and that will help minimize the amount of water that comes into the building.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two of the first steps that I would take.
Okay. Well, Brian, thank you and good luck. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is here today on this home maintenance, repair, and improvement edition of Vox Pop. And next up is Michael in Albany. Michael.
Hi, guys. Just a quick question about a bathroom. I'm doing a bathroom renovation, and I just removed the old one-piece tub and surround, putting in a two-piece shower. I was wondering, do I need to use mold-resistant sheetrock or backer board, because I'm going to be tiling over the acrylic surround up to the ceiling?
Yes, yes. Cement board is better, but the mold-resistant sheetrock would be adequate. It'll last much longer than standard sheetrock. And the mold-resistant sheetrock is not that much more money than standard sheetrock. Otherwise known as
waterproof it.
Otherwise known as gypsum wallboard. Sheetrock and gypsum wallboard are interchangeable terms for the same product. Say again, I cut you off.
Waterproof the area, and should I bring the wallboard down to the tub itself, or just above the lip that you screw to those studs?
Yeah, I would, depending upon the detail of your tub, typically they'll have a flange. Ideally, the wallboard would come down to the inside of the tub so that the flange is behind, acting as a type of flashing.
Okay.
And there are products that you can apply to the waterproof gypsum wallboard. Schlater, I think, is one of the products, and it makes it even more water impermeable.
Okay, that's kind of like just roll it on.
Yes,
you're priming.
It's a system, and it's like a plastic grid, and you can roll that out over top of the waterproof drywall. You know, there are different levels of detail that you can undertake, but definitely go with at least the waterproof sheetrock.
All right, Michael, thanks for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. If you have a question about a home maintenance or repair issue today, and Carmen in Delmar is on. Carmen. Hello.
Hi.
You're on.
So I'm calling about, I'm basically wanting to install a aluminum and or steel patio cover. I want it attached to the house, and I want to make sure that it can, I live in the Northeast, so it can take the snow and the wind. And so my question is, what kind of person am I looking for to do this? Do I need a general contractor? Do I need to get a permit?
You mean like one of those awnings you see advertised on TV, Carmen? Like I see these on late night TV. They have standalones and connected to the house, and they've got to be very expensive because they say, well, it's a couple thousand off here and there, and it looks like a good idea.
Yeah, well, the one that I did see was online at one. I believe it was Home Depot.
Ah, okay. Well, we won't do prices for that.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a specialty. Typically, general contractors will not do that. And as Ray mentioned, there are awning companies out there that specialize in that. That would be my first call to a company that specializes in those awnings. And typically, they're designed to withstand the wind loads and snow loads for the particular area that they sell them.
Okay. All right. So then I need to contact someone that's your specialty in awning.
Right. And if you buy the product from a big box store, they typically have services to install those, and those would be contractors that are somewhat skilled or familiar with the product. So it doesn't necessarily need to be specifically an awning company. You could buy the materials at one location, and the seller could hook you up with a contractor.
Okay. Now, my last question, do you think I need to get a permit?
No, it's Delmar. I imagine you probably do.
Technically, you should check with the building department. Some communities would require that, and some may not require that. So you could put in an anonymous call to the building department and ask them. And again, typically, if the product is purchased from it's like a chain or
yeah.
an awning company, they're more mm-hmm. more likely to say just go ahead because they're established and they've covered the codes. The concerns for the building department are wind and snow, protection for public safety.
Yeah. All right, Carmen, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Phyllis is in, says Copaghan, but I don't think that's correct. Phyllis, where are you calling from?
Copaque.
Oh, Copaque. Okay.
Yeah.
Copaghan is a new thing that our intern came up with. All right, you're on. Go ahead.
So I have a question. I have a very small septic system and leach fields. I had the septic recently drained, and I'm trying to understand when the septic isn't drained. Is it going into these leach fields and creating puddles here and there?
No. When you say you have your septic drained, I expect you would have your septic tank pumped.
Cleaned out.
Right. So the waste from the house goes into a tank, typically minimum 1,000-gallon tank for a three-bedroom home. And
no, this is not even a one-bedroom home, and it's a plastic-type, a very small septic okay. tank.
Okay. They can be made out of plastic, or they used to be made
yeah,
out of steel,
like
too,
that.
Or even concrete block. Anyways,
what is this leach field about?
Okay. As I was explaining, the effluent comes from the house and goes to a septic tank, and that's where about 40% of the digestion occurs, a treatment of the waste occurs there, and that's anaerobic digestion,
mm-hmm.
Anaerobic bugs, and then the rest of the treatment occurs downstream from the septic tank. The effluent goes out of the septic tank to what's called a distribution box, and then from the distribution box are several lines. Number of lines and the length of lines are based upon the number of bedrooms of your house and the soil characteristics, how well the soil drains, and that's your leach field. And that's where the rest of the treatment takes place, and that maybe around 60% of the treatment occurs out there, and that's aerobic digestion, different uh-huh. types of little bugs. So that's and then once the tank is pumped and you flush your toilet or use your kitchen sink, that tank is just going to act as a holding tank until it fills up of 500 gallons or 1,000 gallons. And then once it fills up, it's going to exit and go to the distribution box and out to the leach field. So that's how that works.
Okay, so if I see water in a certain area, then it could be the leach field?
Well, if you had the tank pumped and say after a week or two, the tank fills up and it starts flowing out to your leach field again, if you see effluent rising from your ground, or you can smell it too, then you have a problem somewhere in the system, and you can get a hold of a licensed professional engineer or architect to check that out, or a septic company. But you do need a system designed for replacement and by a qualified professional, and that's a licensed engineer or a registered architect.
All right, Phyllis, thank you very much. Let's grab one more call before the next break. And I know David in Saugerties was disconnected. And David, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
You piqued my interest earlier when you were talking about the condensation occurring from underneath a building. Just recently went through a whole mold remediation in my home and was displaced for about 5 months. And the summer being extra humid, extra rainy, and extra warm, we've been running the air conditioning constantly to help keep the humidity down inside the house. But there are days when it is still humid but cool occasionally, and not cool enough to run a dehumidifier. And I'm wondering if you had any ideas on how to keep the humidity down without making it freezing cold with the air conditioning or too hot with the dehumidifier.
Okay. I don't think it's too cool to run the dehumidifier. You can run that at a lower temperature than what you would run an air conditioner. And in fact, by running a dehumidifier, you'll actually increase the temperature of your space. But because
Right. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Well, if the house is cool and you're dumping warmer air into it, the amount of moisture that air can hold is greater than at a lower temperature. So that will decrease your relative humidity in your home. That will accomplish what you're trying to do. And at the same time, it'll make your house warmer if your house is cool. So running a dehumidifier in that case is the way to go versus an air conditioner, because an air conditioner is going to take that warm air and dump it outside, as opposed to the dehumidifier. It takes that warm and keeps it inside. So I would use the dehumidifier inside. And I would also suggest you get humidity gauge. They're inexpensive, so you know the facts. You do have. Okay, and what do you try to keep that around, 60%, 50%?
Try to keep it below 60 as best we can.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, well, David, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It's home improvement, repair, maintenance today. Darren Tracy is our guest. And who has been, oh boy, I'll tell you what, Jerry in Northampton's been waiting quite a while. Jerry, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a comment about the clogged toilet question from the top of the show.
Okay.
We had a situation that sounds pretty much identical to what that person had, and our plumber actually suggested the product called the Green Gobbler.
The what now?
It's an enzyme-based called Green Gobbler.
Oh, okay, the
That's
Green
the
Gobbler.
Name I know. okay, there are other products like it, but it's called Green Gobbler, and it's basically an enzyme-based product, and there's a they explain how to use it on there. Mm-hmm. And we did do that, and our toilet now flushes.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks for.
And the reason he suggested that was because we tried the plunging and the snake, and he said that sometimes the clog is further down, like hair or whatever, some sort of solid matter builds up further down in the system, like in the that little U hook part of the pipe.
Yeah.
And that the plunging doesn't necessarily get it out.
Okay.
Because it's kind of stuck to the wall. So anyway, that was his explanation as to why to do that. And he did say that if that didn't work, he would have to go in from the top actually,
we're
taking the toilet off and go down.
Yeah,
right.
Flush down
yeah, that's what I was talking. One of the options I was talking about.
Hang on, Jerry. Go ahead, Darren.
That was one of the options I was talking about. Is snake it, or you could take the toilet.
The Green Goblin.
Okay, we got you. Now, do you work for that company by any chance, sir?
I don't.
Okay.
And I know you're not supposed to do brand names, but
that's terrific,
that's
Jerry.
One that I use.
Jerry, let me just say. Let me say two things.
All right.
Green Gobbler, that's a great name for the product. But the reason I don't think that is a problem is because the gentleman's toilet downstairs works.
Yeah.
So it seems to be isolated to that
particular... So it's not an outside line issue.
It seems to be isolated to that one particular toilet. But thank you for the comment.
Yeah, thanks. And we got the name, I'll tell you that.
That's a great name.
It's a Spider-Man nemesis, right? The Green Goblet. Mike in Allwell, Vermont. Mike, you're on.
Yes, thank you very much. I've got a mystery, and I'm hoping you can answer this. I have a two-floor home. I have two toilets, one up, one down. Both are relatively new toilets. I just had my leach field done, had the septic system redone, and my tank has been pumped. The upstairs toilet has an odor of sewage. The bottom downstairs toilet never does. The upstairs does and has for the last year and a half. And I'm wondering, how could that be?
Yeah, that's odd, an odd problem. Your downstairs toilet's flushing properly, no backup? Okay.
That's right. Both toilets flush, properly. Thank you.
Summer or winter or both?
It's been pretty steady for a year.
Yeah, I would check to make sure that the house vent pipe extends a minimum of 18 inches above the roof. You may be getting some of the fumes wicking in from the vent pipe, and there may be a poor connection in the piping. The piping, a joint may have cracked, and you're getting some of the sewer gases escaping into the house.
What about the wax seal between the toilet and the floor? Can that make a difference?
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing to check, because with a toilet, the toilet itself makes the P-trap seal. So in the wax is below that. So if you don't have a good seal there, some of the gases could escape between. You know, that's a really good thing to check. And one more thing is, if you have an unused shower or sink in the area, those are trapped also, and if they're unused, the water evaporates out and sewer gases escape through there. So just add some water to those sinks, and that's a comment for anybody that has an unused bathroom.
Run a little
shower,
water.
You know, every 3 months or 4 months, put a cup of water into your shower or sink that's not used.
Okay.
Yeah, that seal sounds like the most likely candidate.
Now, when you replace a seal, and I've replaced a few myself, do you ever try those non-wax seals?
No, I haven't. I
tried one once.
Yeah. What's it made out of?
You're asking the wrong guy. You know, I was lucky to get the toilet off.
Yeah.
But I had a little trouble making the height right. In other words, the wax sort of, if you put it in place, it sort of settles nicely. These, you have to really be careful about height.
I've had good luck with a wax seal that has a rubber funnel at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And I've even doubled them up sometime, put one wax seal on top of another, and that seems to work pretty well.
We should have asked the last caller if the toilet was rocking at all, because I think if you have a poorly put in wax seal and the toilet rocks.
If the toilet rocks, that's a candidate for a slight opening to occur between the wax seal and the toilet itself.
This email came in from Barb in Holland Patent. Is it okay to leave our water softener drain running into our septic system?
No.
Simple.
Not advised.
Simple, eloquent. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Steve in Berkshire County, what is all that noise? Steve.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have an old house that dates originally from the 1850s, although it's been renovated a couple times. And apparently I have sewer pipe that could be 100 years old, that has developed a kink in it, according to my plumber, somehow outside the house. The ground has shifted or something. And for the last two winters, I've had an ice problem there. That ice forms in some sort of elbow turn or something like that. And, has to be plugged out. Now, they're telling me that in order to fix that, they're going to have to excavate my backyard, take out my deck, and replace that whole pipe. I mean, it's very expensive. But it has been suggested to me that I can put one of these heat wires down there, and that it would keep it, warm enough so that ice would not melt during the winter. Ice would melt, rather, during the freezes.
Right.
It would keep it ice free. Is that a possibility, rather than having to dig the whole thing up? During the summer and the spring, it works fine. There's no problem. But sometime during the winter, for the last two winters, we get a cold snap, ice forms in there, and I get backed up in the toilet.
Hi, Steve. It is a possibility. It's called a heat trace. I have not heard of those being installed in a septic system, because typically the wastewater from a septic system is warm enough to melt any ice that's in the pipe, or if pitched properly, it doesn't stay in the pipe. So I'm thinking that may not solve the problem. It sounds like you may have a pipe that has settled in some way and created a pocket where ice can form, or it may be plugged up with a root, or part of the pipe has collapsed. So I'm not sure that a wire is going to solve that problem. Another simpler solution would be, if it's strictly a freeze problem, is put a piece of insulation over top of the pipe. If it's running underneath a deck, you're not going to have the insulation protection from the snow, so it's more likely to freeze. So if you took a piece of 2-inch thick by 2-foot wide by 8-foot long rigid insulation and laid it on the ground over top of your pipe, that would help protect the soil from freezing. And it would, and again, because you have your deck in place, it doesn't have the insulating protection from the snow, so that might solve the problem.
Right.
So give that a try if you have access to it.
All right. Now, 100-year-old pipe, is that always going to be a clay pipe?
No, not necessarily. You could have a cast iron pipe. Right. Yep.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. We go to Holly. Holly in New York. What part of New York are you calling from?
Fort Johnson.
I'm sorry, say it again?
Fort Johnson.
Ah, I didn't say that here. Well, welcome to Albany. You're on.
So I am replacing the glass in a big picture window, and I'm hoping you know the codes. The window is not near a door, but it is only 16 inches high off the floor. So the question is, do I need to use tempered glass or not?
You may. I don't know the code exactly off the top of my head. I think it's 18 inches above the floor. I can check that. If you want to contact me by sending me an email at darren@westbranchinc.com, I'll check that after. But I'm thinking the number is 18 inches, magic number.
darren@westbranchinc.com.
That's correct. Or
got it.
Or Google West Branch Engineering, and that has my contact information.
Holly, thanks a lot for the call. And now over to Louise in Kingston. Hello, Louise in Kingston.
Hi, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a single-handle pull-out kitchen faucet in my house, which I inherited from its previous owner. And last week, the handle of said faucet came off in my hand, and it is in a rather uncommon color these days, which is a kind of off-white, ivory, almond-type color.
Oh, yeah.
And I am just wondering if you know of any source where I might find replacements in that or a like color.
Not off the top of my head. Your best bet is probably to do an online search. And if you,
I have tried.
Okay. Do you know the manufacturer of your faucet?
Like,
say it again, Louise.
It's a Moen.
Moen.
I have a
okay, that's helpful.
Them.
Yeah, that's a problem these days. It's really, really difficult.
Number.
It's really difficult to find any personal help over the phone.
Yeah.
But if you do have, it seems like if you punched in Moen with the part, particularly the part number, you might have.
Fortunately, I can't locate that.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
I think it's quite an old series.
Yeah, I spend too much time searching for parts on the internet.
I know.
Trying to find the exact replacement part. If
I mean, maybe like an auction site, maybe eBay or something.
Yeah, eBay is often helpful for finding a particular part versus some part supplier store.
All
for,
right.
For oddballs. Try that. Good luck.
Good luck, Louise. And now I think we'll go over to Derek in Vermont, who was disconnected earlier. A lot of disconnections here. I'm going to blame our engineer, Zach, for this. You're on, Derek.
Oh, hi. I have a problem that seems insolvable by anybody, so I'm hoping you can help me. I'm getting a black sediment in my hot water line, and nobody seems to be able to identify what the cause is or what the solution is. It's only in the hot water, and it's worse when the water hasn't been running for a few days.
Hmm.
And I've replaced the anode in the hot water tank and flushed the hot water tank at the same time. And it seemed better for maybe 5 to 10 days, but then it just reverted.
Derek, you did what I was going to suggest, and that was to replace the anode in the hot water tank. Other than that, I would say you've got some minerals in your water that are causing the problem. I'm assuming you're on residential, your own supply, not to municipal water.
Yeah, but I've got a pretty extensive water softening system and an iron a sulfur curtain on the cold water line, but so the cold water line is fine. The hot water line is the only place where we have this problem, and it's a very fine, dark, almost black particulate.
Now, can he send that to a cooperative extension and have it analyzed to find out what it is?
I'm not sure. I've not heard of that, but I know some water treatment services will analyze the water for free. Like, can I mention the? Like a Culligan, they'll come out and analyze the water.
Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I've had the water analyzed for cations, and they are, metals, and they're well within limits, although the manganese is just a touch high. I've got a magnesium anode, and no salts of magnesium are black, so I can't help. And Bulderis, who supplied the equipment, aren't any help at all.
Is this something new with your equipment, or have you had this problem in the recent past?
Well, it's been in for 18 years, and the problems only started about a year ago. 6 months to a year ago.
Yeah. I don't want to take up a lot of time on the line here. If you want to contact me after, I think it's an equipment problem.
Yeah.
Something is going on with your Budera system.
Okay. Yep. So your email address once again is
Darren@westbranchinc.com.
All right. Let's grab. Go ahead.
And I wanted to say one thing. I just checked my notes regarding the need for tempered glass.
Yeah.
And 18 inches is the number. If your glass is closer to the floor than 18 inches, then the glass is required to be tempered for safety reasons.
And what is tempering?
Tempered means that when it breaks, it breaks in a zillion pieces and not big shards of glass that will cut you.
Now, why would that be only if it's within 18 inches of
the floor? You're more likely to break it. A child is more likely to break it at a lower height.
Interesting.
Or next to a door, too, if you're within, I'm not sure the number next to the door. I think it's within 18 inches from a door. The glass needs to be tempered as well by building code.
Truly amazing, the things we learn. Darren, Tracy, thank you so much for being on the program. We appreciate it very much. Our number here, I guess we're done. Zach, there goes the music. All right, well, we'll end the show then. Support comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Who Will Write Our History?, recounting the story of writers, scholars, and artists in the Warsaw Ghetto, should they not survive, August 12th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival.org. At Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, featuring hard cider made from local apples, now serving pizza, light fare, beer, wine, and spirits in the tasting room, open Tuesday through Sunday, ninepincider.com. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. The calls were answered by Jackie Orchard, the intern. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, astronomers Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson return to answer your questions about the heavens. Stand by now for 51%.